Kiss FX, goodbye. Kiss FM, hello. Those words were the centerpiece of full-page and full-spread ads in all the major Philippine dailies back in the mid-80s. It was to introduce a brand new radio station out of the oldest FM station in the Philippines. The full story in a bit. Hello, I'm George, and this is your masterclass. We continue our series on radio, and in this episode, we take a look at promotional gimmicks of radio stations, other than the usual bumper stickers, windshield sunscreens, and on-air giveaways. This is brought to you by Cutprint Productions. Last week, we talked about the different ways radio stations try to keep their listeners locked in. You see, with the tough competition in radio, in FM alone there are about 26 radio stations, programming is not enough to get a share of listener loyalty and consequently the advertising pie. However, on-air promos are not enough either. Radio stations have to reach out to their audience, the better to determine what listeners like. Back in the 60s and 70s, when pop stations started mushrooming all over AM, radio started its campaign for community presence. Since most of the pop stations catered to the youth, schools were a natural target. During those years, school fairs and concerts were the in thing, and naturally, those fairs had what you call dedication booths. Kiosks which had student DJs playing pop hits and offering dedications to fairgoers for a fee, pretty much like DJs on radio. A certain exclusive school for girls had this bright idea. Their dedication booth was handled by the third-year students, the juniors. They decided to invite DJs from radio station DZRJ, then the innovators of pop radio with the moniker Boss Radio, to man their dedication booth. And since they were juniors, they dubbed their booth as DZJR, JRS in junior. That was a brilliant play on DZRJ and their being juniors. The radio station loved it since it somehow maintained their branding, albeit having the call letters rearranged, and the students were able to own the brand too with JR. Suffice it to say, it was an instant hit. Fairgoers flocked to the booth to meet and greet the RJ jocks. It was the first time they got to connect a voice to a face, and at the same time, make requests and dedications for a fee, of course. The station got its mileage, and the students reaped a huge financial windfall from the exercise. Other schools followed suit. Radio jocks were invited to host school concerts, sit as judges in competitions, one even had to judge a spelling bee for whatever bizarre reason, and even go out on a dinner date with a contest winner. I remember I was a junior high schooler when we invited jocks from DZUW, RJ's competitor, to man our dedication booth. I was the pseudo DJ, and a certain Sir Mikey joined me. I vividly remember his first bit of advice. "Don't shout, the microphone has a volume control." All I had to do was adjust the volume. That way, I can control my modulation. Those words were probably the most valuable pieces of advice I ever got, which paved the way for my having a career in broadcast. The encounter was serendipitous in a way. 3 years after, that same Sir Mikey was one of the audition masters when I applied to be a DJ. 8 years after, he became my mentor in another radio station. And today, he's one of my best buddies. In the 80s, competition started to heat up, especially on FM. It became more challenging with the advent of MTV and music videos. The song of the Buggles, Video Killed a Radio Star, was ominous, so we had to devise ways and means to avoid being killed by video. One radio station became a block timer on television and came up with a show that featured its jocks as hosts. They talked about the latest trends and played music videos. Another DJ hosted a midday show featuring all music videos in another channel. I was in GMA during those times, and we used our TV capability to our advantage. We acquired the rights to certain concerts from the United States, and we decided to air them on prime time with a twist. We called it Stereo Vision. To get a full experience, television viewers were told to set up their stereo sets beside their TV sets. The radio is tuned in to our station, and the television was an RTV channel. In other words, they got to enjoy the concert in full stereo fidelity. Remember, there was no TV stereo that time. We premiered with the Simon and Garfunkel reunion concert at Central Park. It was a hit. And no other radio station could claim the same thing. They didn't even have a television station. This idea snowballed to another production when Coca-Cola was about to launch their vaunted Coca-Cola radio campaign to meet Pepsi-Cola's choice of a new generation advertising head-on. We proposed a one-hour show on primetime TV and radio, featuring top music videos seamlessly mixed nonstop. We suggested the title Music Watch with Coca-Cola. Liont bought the whole idea lock, stock, and barrel. Imagine getting one full hour of airtime on primetime with opening and closing billboards, bumpers, TVCs during every break, and having your product name on a program title, and on stereo vision, on radio and television. No one else has ever done it. No one else has ever gotten that extensive mileage, and no one else was able to top that. The result? Liont got what it wanted to achieve. Our TV station had a ready-made primetime show every week, and our radio station became visible on television. Talk about cross-plugging. And it started a long working relationship with Liont. This brings me to what I talked about during the start of this episode. I was given an opportunity to open another radio station in the latter part of the mid-80s. We were going to reformat the first and oldest FM station in the Philippines. DZFX was a middle-of-the-road facility. It was a go-to station of early FM listeners in the late 60s and early 70s. However, as FM stations started emerging, FX lost its first mover advantage. The owners decided to look for another way to compete with the new stations. I was offered the challenge. When the principals met me, they asked me what I wanted to do. I told them we were going to compete with the most followed pop station during those times, 99.5 RT. They asked me how I intended to do that. What with their very popular DJs? I told them we were going to pirate their top jocks and newscasters and some other top jocks from other radio stations. I told them we were going to pay them talent fees unheard of during that time. They initially balked, but when they started absorbing everything, they told me, George, you're going to kill a radio station. Maybe more. And I said, precisely. And they agreed. So I rounded up my choice jocks and newscasters, told them the plan for a dream team and station, and they got on board. We agreed to all resign effectively on the 31st of July and disappear from radio. Naturally, listeners noticed our absence, but nobody knew what the hell was going on, not even our former bosses. For 2 months, we met regularly and mapped out our strategy. At the same time, I got my dependable clients, Coca-Cola, to do the unthinkable. I asked them to sponsor our launch. They get exclusive product lockout for the first 6 months of our operations if they go with us the whole nine yards for the launch. They agreed. And so, backed by the creative geniuses of McCann Erickson, Coke's ad agency, we devised a plan on how we were going to launch. Since the frequency was 101.1, we decided to launch on October 11th, which was 1011 or 101.1. Branding, the name of the game. I convinced the station owners to acquire the phone numbers ending in 1011. We were able to get free lines, and we eventually aired it as 827-101.1. Branding. And there's more. Since all of us were off the air for more than 2 months, we decided to resurface with a bang. We produced a launch video divulging the new station as Kiss FM, introducing all of us. We sent cryptic invitations to all the advertisers for a party at a club on October 10th. Of course, some hints were leaked out, and it piqued the curiosity of the advertisers and clients, and the club was packed solid. We played the launch video, came out to meet the guests, who were stunned that we were all going to be together in one radio station. That very same evening, our salespeople became so busy taking in advertising placements, and we weren't even on the air yet. The next morning, all the major dailies had full center spreads touting the big launch. The copy went, "At noon today, Kiss FX goodbye, Kiss FM hello." And with it was emblazoned a pair of huge red lips, our logo. Underneath the headline, our names were revealed, and we were called the Kiss Air Force. We deliberately played classical music from sign-on till noon, as if nothing was going to happen on DZFX. At exactly noon, we switched the classical music off and played our launch production, followed by the first live jog. It was an instant smash. And the rest is history, the most audacious launch ever seen on radio. This started a bandwagon of advertisers who made a beeline to our station. In fact, Pepsi, they didn't know what hit them having been locked out for the first 6 months, made sure they wouldn't be left out the next time around. So, during our first anniversary, Coke sent a truck full of soft drinks to be served to our guests. Pepsi did the same, plus unfurled a massive vertical streamer that ran from the roof deck of the Makati building we were broadcasting from all the way to the ground floor. It could be seen from as far as the commercial center. And all it said was, "Kiss FM, the choice of the Pepsi generation." Those were the glory days of advertising radio collaborations. Many other clients joined in on the fun, bolstering the belief that radio truly was the mass medium. From toothpastes to body colognes to fast food joints, there was no limit to what radio could offer advertisers. In the next episode, we talk about concert tie-ups, celebrity guests, and other enticements radio could think of to get its listeners glued to their sets. Now, don't you wish Spotify had all these promos too? We'll also tackle the effect of Spotify and other platforms on radio. If video wasn't able to kill the radio star, has Spotify rammed the last nail on the radio coffin? I'll see you again next week. Hope you enjoyed my musings and reminiscences. And tell me what you want to hear. Just email george@cutprintproductions.com. That's george@cutprintproductions.com. You stay safe and sane. Take good care of yourself and keep listening to the masterclass. Good night and God bless. Ad maiorem Dei gloriam. This show is produced by Cutprint Podcast Network and George Boone. Executive producer, Patsy Ferrer. Writer, George Mercado. Creative director, Christine Alido. Social media manager, Nia Escondo. Sound engineer, MJ Habal. Researcher, Lee Malcolm. To advertise, email us at podcast@cutprintproductions.com or call us at 0918-807-8478. That's 0918-807-8478.